It looks like the way that most ancient civilizations approached math was it was a very simple tool to use to figure out, as you said, commerce, construction, where, as you said, the Greeks, they brought math to a different level where it was, they saw the transcendence of math. It wasn't just a way to figure something out in the world. They saw math as this, the same level of philosophy and religion.
3, 2, 1. Welcome to Math Machine.
Welcome to another Nerding Out with That Nerdy Catholic. I'm here with my alter nerd, Cesar,
and my brother.
And today we are continuing our discussion on math. In the greater discussion, is math real? Last week we looked at Plato's cave and the question of what does it mean to be real? And today we're going to dive into diving into the history of math. And this is, it's going to be a kind of a broad, rough overview, right?
Yes.
Yeah. But we're going to start at way back at the beginning. So why don't we start off? Where did math start, Cesar?
I think it started when, in the prehistory, when people start to, count to know how many chips or how many things they have at hand, no? I remember when I was little, one of my history teachers told me that there were some cave paintings around, when you can see some numbers or sort of a numbers that are marked in the wall of this cave. This is way, way before, any great civilization. Mm-hmm. That's the need that the early men has for, for knowing how many things are there, that start driving math, and that's great, no? So even before we know something, the writing was invented, I would say, math was there.
Mm-hmm.
No? Math was the necessity of count, the necessity of start adding up things.
Yeah,
probably drive the first man to have math.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's interesting to think about, we see the pictures on the cave walls, and we see the marks to see that they were saying, well, how many did we have? We don't know what language they had.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot that we don't know about it. We don't know what they understood about addition and subtraction, mm-hmm. but we at least knew that they needed to say, well, how many things do we have?
Exactly. So I think that's kind of the beginning, no? We besides those cave paintings, we don't have much more around that. But probably if we move on into the human history, we'll see that the Sumerians has the first sexagesimal count system, no? They count from 0 up to 60, which is a lot. I mean, for the first 60 numbers, there is a lot, but there is a table, a Sumerian table that is dated 2,000 years probably before Christ, 2,000 years or so. I don't remember exactly, but that is the first indication of a great civilization, like the Sumerians having a document that they were, they were doing math.
Right,
which is something great. We don't have that much documents from the past.
Right, and it was probably made by someone who was trying to figure out taxes.
That's probably true. How many do you have to pay to the king? That's I completely agree with
you. You have to be able to count and add and subtract to see, or even multiply and divide to see. Well, this is how much you have. This is how much you owe the king.
Yes, definitely. That should probably be like that, and the other big force is the trade.
Mm-hmm.
You have to trade. Okay, I give you this something of these things, you gave me something these things. So that's that you need to count that, no? Mm-hmm. So that's trade and probably taxes. I mm-hmm. haven't thought about that. That could drive the beginning of the arithmetic, no? Talking about that, you know, there are kind of four pillars of math, mm-hmm. no? We talk about arithmetic, geometry, trigonometry, and algebra, no?
Mm-hmm.
And I mentioned those four pillars in that way because I think they were start to use in that way, no?
Mm-hmm. Arithmetic in that order.
In that order, yeah. Yes, exactly. Arithmetic has to do, as you well said, with adding, subtracting, no, multiplying, and that has to be the start. Definitely, mm-hmm. that has to be the start. No? But then the fact that our ancient cultures start to build, you know, great things. Mm-hmm. They need to know the shapes and the relationship between the measurements of the sides and the mm-hmm. and those shapes, and then bring us geometry.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. Thinking about if you're building a table, then you can take rough measurements.
Yep.
And you don't really have to. You don't have to do a lot of math, and it doesn't need to be exact or perfect.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're building a very large structure, you can't take a tape measure.
Yes.
Across one of the pyramids, right?
Exactly. That's something. You know, you bring that. To the table because I think that's the born of trigonometry, no?
Mm-hmm.
When using shapes, you need to calculate a bigger side that you cannot, as you said, have a tape to measure that, no?
Mm-hmm.
And that has to brought with angles and triangles, and that's exactly what trigonometry deals with, no?
Mm-hmm.
So I and at the end, algebra, you know, the abstraction of not having a number, but a variable that replaces a number, that mm-hmm. level of abstraction have to come at the end, I think, no?
Yeah.
And that's when, for example, moving from Sumerians to Egypt, we have the ring papyrus, no? That papyrus is dated 1600 before Christ.
Mm-hmm.
So that means it's, first of all, it's really old.
Mm-hmm.
But the interesting thing is that in this papyrus, it is found arithmetic, but also geometry, mm-hmm. trigonometry, especially as you mentioned, for construction of pyramids. We know that Cheops, Khafre, and Mycerinos were the three big, but Egyptians built pyramids all across the Nile,
mm-hmm.
all across the territory. You know? Those happen to be just the three bigs and the most impressive that we saw, but
yeah.
they started long before. So that indication, 1600, imagine 1600 before Christ.
Wow.
It's yeah. a lot. Yeah. It's a lot of time.
Yeah. Well, and I think it's interesting to think about, you know, think back to when I was taking math classes.
Mm-hmm.
And so when you're learning math in school, you don't learn about the history of math.
Mm-hmm.
So you just see the system that is complicated and sometimes it's boring, you know. Yeah. But to think about where it came from and how long it took to, you know, we're going to talk about this later, but develop or discover, but how long it took to start from a very simple counting to, okay, now we need to understand how to add things together, take things away, you know, discover how to, you know, multiply and divide,
mm-hmm.
to thinking, well, now we need to, one, think about larger numbers, two, think about, you know, how do we measure shapes, how do we measure volume, you know, all these things, all these parts of math that were slowly discovered over time.
Yes. And I want to also mention something that I think it's written also in the Bible when God gave the instructions to the king to build the first temple, right?
Mm-hmm.
It has the you know, the P number at that time measured. Mm-hmm. It's just mentioned at three. No, it has to be, you know, the circumference of that has to be three times the diameter of that.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's, and you know, it has to do a lot with the capacity of the people of how well, how exact or how precise do I measure? Mm-hmm. You know? If it's just a something rough, you can always use free. You know? Mm-hmm. But if you're drawing a big thing with something really thin, you have to start using the decimals. Mm-hmm. No? But as long as the approximation makes good sense, mm-hmm. which, you know, in the example of the Bible is, it's assigned P to 3, and I'm sure the temple was really beautiful, as mm-hmm. it says. No, but if the construction get bigger, you need more precision. No, mm-hmm. and that's one of the things that we are going to talk about that also, mm-hmm. and when we talk about the Greeks. No? Mm-hmm. But all in all, as you said, math has to be there. As a civilization was evolving,
yep.
math was evolving. And talking about the ancient Egypt, they already, you know, so just to put into perspective, the Rim Papyrus is dated 1600 before Christ.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And we are talking that approximately 1400 to 1500 before Christ, Exodus happened. I mean, the mm-hmm. Israelites came out mm-hmm. and from Egypt. So
yep.
that was way before that happened, no?
Yeah.
That way before. And at that time, they already have algebra, geometry, trigonometry. So mm-hmm. they have all the tools, mathematical tools, to mm-hmm. build a great civilization that mm-hmm. they were, no? Which is something really, really impressive.
Yeah. Well, actually, thinking about then, that's an interesting overlap, but that's an interesting connection. Thinking about the rough date of the Exodus
mm-hmm.
and the date of the papyrus,
mm-hmm.
to think, so just I just have this picture then in my mind of an Egyptian architect standing there working on this papyrus,
mm-hmm.
figuring out the dimensions of this pyramid,
mm-hmm.
while the nation of Israel is over there
uh-huh.
building, taking the clay, you know, the sand and the grass and building the bricks.
Yes.
For
that construction.
For that construction.
Yeah. Yes, definitely. That's something to think about. That. Yeah.
And I mean, think about that in terms of, you know, we have these ancient histories, and we think about, you know, the history of math. We think about the history of the Jewish people,
mm-hmm.
but all histories overlap.
Yes,
you know, it's one history. It's the history of the world.
Yes,
and it's very easy to think, kind of in silos.
Yes,
yeah, and not think about how everything connects.
Yeah, that's true, and that's important. And trade and commerce bring mm-hmm. that together.
Yeah.
All those civilizations. No?
Yeah.
But one of the biggest mathematicians of the ancient history has to be the Greeks.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Definitely the Greeks. And the reason is that, you know, although, you know, Sumerians, Egyptians, and all other civilizations, they have math, they use math, they develop up to upon algebra there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, one of the things that that the Greeks did, and none of the other civilization did until that point, was to elevate math into a discipline,
mm-hmm.
into a theoretical discipline. No,
mm-hmm.
give that a standard and start developing into a theoretical discipline, and that means that they first of all has to dedicate time to study that, and that means that discipline has a set of rules to build
mm-hmm.
like one brick over the other. And the last thing is that the Greeks brought to them to math is that, you know, the concept of proof. No?
Mm-hmm.
So if this is true, ergo, this other thing is true.
Yeah.
You know? And they build that discipline with yeah. that. No? I remember you mentioned once in one conversation about, you know, the Greeks having something about intertwine their philosophy yeah. with math, right?
Yeah. So it's interesting to think about other ancient civilizations and how they approached math, because he's, as you said, it looks like, I mean, there's a lot that we don't know mm-hmm. about how people lived back then, because we have just fragments of things we can look back and try and figure out what life was like. But it looks like the way that most ancient civilizations approached math was, it was a very simple tool to use to figure out, you know, as you said, commerce, mm-hmm. Construction, where, as you said, the Greeks, they brought math to a different level, where it was, they saw the transcendence of math.
Yeah.
It wasn't just a way to figure something out in the world. They saw math as this, as you said, the same level of philosophy and religion, and I think that's where, as you said, the Greeks were the first to figure out this concept of experimentation and proof, and a way to abstract math to the point where we can say, well, if I can solve this here, then I know, if I know that this is true, mm-hmm. then I can figure out that this is true and this is true and this is true, mm-hmm. because they logically connect.
Yeah.
Right?
That's a very good point. They saw the truth in math. And they saw that when they elevate that as a discipline, they saw that they can build that truth.
Mm-hmm.
And they can either use it, but they can also continue to start building up,
mm-hmm.
no? Which is something that no other civilization until that point did. Yeah. No?
Well, and also what that led to was that the Greeks did math for math's sake.
Yes.
I'm sure the Greeks used math as a tool like other ancient civilizations, but thinking about, you know, calculating pi, you know, the Greeks wanted to calculate pi as precisely as they could,
mm-hmm.
so that they could calculate pi as precisely as they could.
Yeah, exactly.
It wasn't necessarily to solve some problem that they were working on at that moment. And one of the things that I remember learning about the Greeks and how they discovered different aspects of math, when they discovered in working at division, mm-hmm. when they discovered the idea of having fractions, mm-hmm. and ratios, comparing numbers to each other, they had this idea that, as you said, combining religion and math, they had this idea that if you could represent a number, mm-hmm. as a ratio or as a fraction,
mm-hmm.
that there's some perfection in that.
Yeah.
And I can even, you know, think about that. You know, you think about yourself trying to solve a problem, whether in engineering or math or computer science, and that moment when you realize, oh, there's a very simple solution for this, and you just get that feeling like, oh good, everything's right in the world, you know. there's something good here if there's a simple solution to a problem you're working on. So I can just see the Greek mathematicians getting to that point. It's like, oh, here's this number, oh, I can write it as a ratio.
Yeah.
Like that. And so there is this idea of a perfection of a number that could be represented as a ratio. And there is an imperfection if it couldn't be represented, mm-hmm. as a ratio. And we know now, you know, the way we describe it, we would say, you know, if a number is rational,
mm-hmm.
or irrational.
Yes, exactly.
An irrational number is a number that if you try and, you know, if you, it can't be described as a ratio.
Mm-hmm.
And if you try and write it out in decimal form, the decimal number just keeps going and going and going forever and ever.
Yes.
And so, and you can never see in either the decimal or the ratio form, you can never see the perfect number. And to see how that, I remember when I realized the connection between the words irrational and rational, between math and looking at the value of something, oh, that's, uh-huh. that's irrational. That doesn't make any sense.
No, and that's right. That's how they integrated philosophy math, logic with their worldview, right? With their religion, which is something.
Well, and even connecting that back to what we were talking about last week about Plato's cave, that you can see in both of those examples the Greek desire to understand the world.
Yes.
You know, to understand in a more precise and perfect way than other civilizations had desired, that to say that there has to be some rational connection between the world around us, between the world of the gods.
And not only trying to, you know, to understand the world, but to know the truth, you know? Yeah. So those are two big things that the Greek pursue.
Yeah.
And in that pursuit, they start to build, I would say, an empire of knowledge, right? That will probably, I know I'm getting ahead, but will probably surpass the Romans by far, no? Yeah. But let's talk about a little more about the Greeks.
Yeah.
Let's have an example of Pythagoras, for example. No? He was born in the Greek island of Samos. And one of his great contributions, and I remember this because I was a little kid in school, you know, the triangle, rectangle, and you have to figure it out, okay, if this is a rectangle and you have one of the sides measure A and the other side measures B, how long is going to be the hypotenuse, no? And he is the one that invented that. You know, the relationship as the formula for that, A squared plus B squared is equal to C squared, which is something that for sure makes them build so many things, beautiful things, beautiful templates with precision, because you start to see the four pillars of math combining there. But also, you know, that formula still stand out up to this moment, right?
Yeah.
It's still stand out. And the funny part is that he doesn't do only the formula. He do the demonstration of why that formula is true, which is, again, to your point prior, no? They want to understand the world, but they also want to understand what is true.
Yeah.
And they start with basic propositions up to the point that to start demonstrating more complicated things, no? So I think Pythagoras did a lot of more things, but that's the one that, you know, hides out. It's Pythagoras' theorem that, you know, you and I everybody learn.
And thinking about this system of measuring triangles, angles. We use the exact formula today.
Yes.
You know, this is something that was from, you know, over 2,000 years ago, and everyone that learns that.
Yeah,
exact formula.
I'm going to one of the lessons that we learned from Plato's cave, no, the world of the ideas and the world of the senses, no, that the world of the ideas survives the time, doesn't change, which we find in that formula. That formula survives the time. It's, you know, it's more than I would say 2,600 years old that we celebrate the birth of that formula. but that's a lot, and that's because that's. Plato was there, I would say, that's part of the world of the ideas.
No? Yeah.
And the other thing I would like to say, you know, there's another Greek mathematician, is Theatonus, I think is the correct name. He have to do a lot of work about what you said, no? The numbers that are called irrational numbers, no? So the way that he tried to understand how does this generate, why are they different from the rational number, the fractions, no? So, for example, when we introduce Pythagoras, we introduce the square root, no? And usually, you know, if it's not 4, if it's not 16, if it's not 9, mm-hmm. that's going to be led to an irrational number.
Mm-hmm.
No?
Mm-hmm.
And you can do an approximation, but that's only an approximation.
Right.
And that, you know, this Greek mathematician is not well known, really,
mm-hmm.
but his work on irrational numbers survives mm-hmm. until the moment.
No? Yeah, yeah. And thinking about, as you were talking about before, the connection between math and truth, this desire, I see this desire in all these Greek mathematicians. There's no need, if you're just thinking about measuring things
mm-hmm.
that you're building, to go to that precision.
Exactly.
Of, you know, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 decimal places.
Yes.
But if you're thinking about the truth of it, the more precise you are, the better.
Yes. Yes, exactly.
The more truth you discover.
Exactly. And talking about truth, I want to jump forward to Euclides.
Mm-hmm.
In my view, he's one of the greatest Greek mathematicians that has ever been. No? And the reason I say that is because Euclidean geometry has not been changed, has mm-hmm. been the base of every geometry for more than 2,000 years. I mean, mm-hmm. the notion of knowing Euclidean geometry was just born late 18th century,
mm-hmm.
when one of the greatest mathematicians, Gauss, started thinking about surfaces that were not necessarily flat.
Mm-hmm.
No? But up to that point, the only geometry that we know is the Euclidean geometry.
Mm-hmm.
And he started building his geometry with a dot mm-hmm. and a line, and saying that in a plane surface, you have a dot and you have a line, and there is just one tangent and one only tangent to be built to that.
Mm-hmm.
And with that premises, he started building his geometry that survived and was the only geometry for more than 2,000 years. Yeah.
So thinking about Euclid and his geometry, you have people that are studying math, especially on the graduate level, that are studying directly from his book,
yes.
from the original source. And I think about other areas of study. One of my personal areas of study that I've been doing a lot of learning in is fermentation.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a lot that we understand about fermentation that we didn't even understand 100 years ago, let mm-hmm. alone 2,000 years ago. And we know that the Egyptians made beer.
Mm-hmm.
And the art of fermentation goes back thousands of years.
Mm-hmm.
But the understanding of fermentation has grown so much, and we've known so much about it in the last 100 years that, with the understanding of microbiology and that if you're studying fermentation now,
mm-hmm.
you're using texts that people didn't have 100 years ago,
yeah.
let alone 2,000 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
But to think that that Euclid wrote his book on geometry
mm-hmm.
and people are still using that,
yes,
over 2,000 years later. And to think that people are not just studying it as a historic text, but studying it as a modern text, because we still use his math. We still use the exact formulas that he came up with.
You know, unless you have, something real in kind of curve space,
mm-hmm.
we're still going to use Euclidean geometry,
mm-hmm.
right? So that is, again, the pursuit of truth, and the fact that he built his geometry from basic, it is called axioms, his basic principles that are understood to be true.
Mm-hmm.
No. So on over that, they build theorem over theorem over theorem until they have, you know, a whole billion of knowledge, in this case,
yeah,
geometry, that we have to thank to Euclides, no? And that was built in such a way that, as you said, is surviving 2,000 years from this moment, no? So let's move to our next Greek mathematician, in this case is Archimedes, no? Archimedes was born in Syracuse, and by the time Archimedes was has grown up, you know, Rome has started to rise, and you know, it is said in the history books that Archimedes was in his town and was trying to help to defend Rome, no? And he built a lot of artifacts because he, in use of math, he built a lot of artifacts to keep the mighty, powerful fleet of Rome outside of the city, no? And it was also up to the point that they were thinking, of, okay, the Syracuse we are not going to take. So one of the things that he started to do in order to defend his city was to start building concave mirrors. So the light of the sun concentrated in those mirrors and start burning those ships. No, he also built great catapults in order to throw the big stones up to the ships. No, but the precision on the angles and how strong has to be, it all has to be calculated. Yeah. And Archimedes was a great mathematician that for sure he can do that, no? So when the Romans finally conquer and get into the city of Syracuse, you know, the general was eager to know the man that has almost beaten him, you know? So he said to a couple of soldiers, bring me that man. So when the couple of soldiers found Archimedes was in the middle of something, trying to discover again. And I can figure it out, Archimedes, no. How is this done? Trying to dig into the realm of math on trying to know it more. And then the soldiers came and say, hey, my general is asking for you. Say, wait a minute. I just need to finish. And the soldiers just kill him. I mean, what? they don't know, but, yeah, you know, they killed one of the greatest mathematicians of Greek history.
I know I've been in that situation many times where you're in the middle of trying to figure something out and someone comes in and it's like, just one minute.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. But, you know, to Archimedes, we were talking about pi. To Archimedes, we have to say that he was one of the ones interested in knowing what is the true value. And again, this word came again, no? The true value of pi. No? He starts saying that it was greater than 3/10/71, but less than 3/1/7. No? So he narrowed pi among these two numbers, which is probably a four or five digit precision of pi, I would say. No, but that's you know, that calculation to be done, it's something really impressive. No? Really impressive.
Yeah, and as we were saying before, the real world application of pi, creating something that's a circle, at that time, you didn't need even that level of precision.
Yes.
But the desire, I need to understand more of this.
Yes. Yeah, and that's one of the things that I think a lot of things were lost when Rome came, and just, you know, with mighty power, but not getting that much into bringing to science. No, there, my history teacher used to say that Rome conquered Greece, but the Greeks intellectually conquered Rome. No, And they were such a great civilization than the Romans were in terms of knowledge. No?
Yeah. Well, as we're talking about thinking about scripture,
mm-hmm.
what language was the New Testament written in?
Oh, yeah.
And in Greek, not in Latin. Because it was, you know, there was the Greeks were the intellectuals, you said, the intellectual powerhouses of the day.
Yes, exactly. And that is if you are to be intellectual, you have to know Greek at that time.
Yeah. And one subject that we want to start talking about at some point in the future,
mm-hmm.
we want to get more into philosophy. But thinking about it, you know, the Greeks had such a great influence on the whole world at the time. I remember when I first discovered, you know, looking at scripture, you know, looking at the books of Proverbs and Wisdom.
Mm-hmm.
And Proverbs was written before the time of the Greeks. And Wisdom was written during the time of the Greeks. And you can see the Book of Wisdom talks a lot about the cardinal virtues,
mm-hmm.
which was discovered by the Greeks.
Yes.
And so even the worldview of the nation of Israel
mm-hmm.
was impacted by the philosophy of the Greeks.
Yes. And that's some of the contribution that the Greeks gave to the world, actually.
Yeah.
They gave to the Hebrews, but they also gave to the world.
Yeah.
This pursuit of logic, knowledge, and in the case of the cardinal virtues, I'm opening a parenthesis too. It's the pursuit of the moral, what is true,
mm-hmm.
to be a moral man.
Yeah,
no?
Yeah. And you know, thinking about, you know, students to this day read Homer.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, we study a lot of the original Greek sources. That as you said, they have influenced not just the world of that day,
mm-hmm.
but even today. So much of the way we see the world is seen through Greek eyes.
And talking about the Greeks, I want to bring Apollonius to the conversation, because mm-hmm. we may not know him. Apollonius, you know, if I say Apollonius, I'm sure nobody knows who Apollonius is, but he's the one that bring the conics to the study of the conics, no? And we are talking about parabolas, ellipses, hyperbolas,
mm-hmm.
and these are all things that we have to deal with when we are in a school,
mm-hmm.
you know? The equation of the parabolas or the hyperbolas, no?
Mm-hmm.
So we studied that in the school, in math of the school, and we are talking about knowledge that Apollonius was written 200 years before Christ,
mm-hmm.
no? And we still study today mm-hmm. in a school,
yeah.
no? So, and that's great contribution, because when we think about science, parabolas is the figure that if you are throwing something from a high roof,
mm-hmm.
it that's the shape of what's, mm-hmm. what the object is done
mm-hmm.
when it's a free fall and yeah. has some velocity in the x horizontal velocity, you know?
Yeah.
So when you study about ballistics or you study about throwing objects or rockets, mm-hmm. you have to study parabolas.
Yeah. Even thinking about studying, you know, trying to calculate, you know, orbital velocity.
Yes, exactly.
Or how to get to the moon, right?
There you go.
I'm sure Apollonius never thought that the math that he was working on would someday help people get to the moon.
Or put satellites in orbit.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So, yeah. And we are using, again, we are talking about a guy that lived 200 years before Christ.
Mm-hmm.
No? And we still use his work because that is true.
Mm-hmm.
Right? That doesn't change in time.
Yeah.
It's not subject to corruption like we figured out in the ideal world of
mm-hmm.
coming from Plato. No? And for me, I mean, there are several more examples from the Greeks that I, you know, if we do an episode, we for sure is going to be 3 or 4 hours. But that is something, you know, that they did. Yeah. And they all follow this method of trying to, you know, trying to find the truth, trying to demonstrate why it's true, and bring it, abstract that science not only to a use case that we can see now, to seek the knowledge, just in order to seek truth.
It's interesting to think about this period of history, and especially that the Greeks, you know, everything that they discovered about math. But I love to, sometimes I like to step back and look at all of human history and think about the history of the world as the life of a person, to think about the periods of time in human history. And I know this is very imprecise and not completely scientific, but think about that as far as the period of the life of a person. And so when I think about the time of the Greeks, I think about a kid in middle school, and they're learning and discovering so much about the world around them. You know, before then, they were just kind of in their own world building little things, you know, using blocks, kind of think about the time of the Egyptians and Babylonians building their own little things. And you get to the period of the Greeks, and you start to see that there's a bigger world out there. And I need to understand this world. And it's a period of discovery of something greater than themselves.
Yeah.
And then as they grow up, they keep that the truth that they learned, and then they can start applying that in many different ways. And so we're at this point, we're in the period of human history where we can take all the truth that was discovered by the Greeks, and we have found so many different ways to actually apply that. And we keep learning.
Yeah.
We keep discovering more truth, but we haven't replaced the truth. Yes. As you said, we haven't replaced the truth that we learned from the Greeks.
We are just discovering more inside what is math.
We're discovering either more levels of precision, as you said, you know, the discovering non-Euclidean geometry, discovering this way. Well, what if, you know, everything we do as far as our everyday life, even as we said, putting things into orbit, going to the moon, measuring distances in space, all use Euclidean geometry.
Yeah.
We're discovering now things that we couldn't even imagine a few hundred years ago, of, you know, what is life like around a black hole, or even, you know, close to the sun? How do things orbit around other things? How do planets orbit around stars? We're discovering, you know, that there are places here and there in the universe where space isn't flat.
Yes.
And so we need a different form of math. But it's still, I mean, it's still related to Euclidean geometry. It's not non-Euclidean geometry because it's completely different. It's just called non-Euclidean geometry because the formulas aren't exactly the same. It's basically applying Euclidean geometry to a space that's not flat, right?
Yep. And applying Euclidean geometry, the way that Euclides built his geometry is the same way that they start building non-Euclidean geometry. No, and for example, one of the theorems of Euclidean geometry is that internal angles of a triangle it's 180 degrees. No, so in non-Euclidean geometry, one of the theorems is that the internal angles of a triangle is not equal to 180.
Right, right. You know? If you have a curved spherical space,
yes,
then it's greater. No, then it's less than 180.
Yes.
If you have the term, a horseshoe,
yes,
where it's curved one way in one direction and another way in another, then it's greater than 180 degrees.
Yes, exactly, exactly. Another basic theorem of Euclidean geometry is that from a point that is outside of a rectangle, you can have just one parallel, mm-hmm. right? So in non-Euclidean geometry, it says, because of the surface, you may have multiple, which is, you know, something that they start thinking about, mathematicians start thinking, but, I mean, late in the 18th century.
Mm-hmm. Right?
Yeah. So, but that doesn't invalidate Euclidean geometry.
Exactly.
We still use Euclidean geometry. Yep. But for other cases, when we are not dealing with plane surfaces,
mm-hmm.
then we use non-Euclidean geometry. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, this is a great start to the look at the history of math. We're going to keep digging into the history of math because, you know, we've only come up to 2,000 years ago, and you know a lot has happened since then. But you know, as we said multiple times, it's amazing to see that we still use all this stuff. So we're going to keep looking at the history of math. And I think that as we move forward, we'll delve deeper into this idea that we brought up last week with Plato, started to develop looking at the Greeks, this idea of, is math something that we created mm-hmm. or something that we discovered, or maybe even a combination of both. But I think as we've seen, the views that the Greeks had of math was this view of transcendence, that math was part of something outside of the world. And I think that's a concept that we're going to continue to develop as we keep going deeper into the world of math and what it means for us and how we can use math to see deeper truths, right?
Yeah, definitely. And we in this, you know, review and quick review, I will say, from history of math, we stop with the Greeks for the moment, but there's much more, you know, coming.
Yeah,
to analyze.
So if you have any thoughts, we'd love for you to share them in the comments. You know, if there's anything, any mistakes that we've made, you know, point those out as well. We are always willing to learn more, to see our mistakes, right, and to learn from our mistakes. But share any thoughts that you have in the comments, any questions you have, anything you want us to cover in the future, let us know in the comments down below. Please share this video with your friends, your family. Subscribe so that you can, and you know, click the notification bell so that you can get notified whenever we put something new up. And we hope that you will be part of this conversation as well. So, Cesar, thank you again, sir.
Thank you for having me here.
Right. And we'll see you again next week.
See you then.
System shut down.